Good morning and welcome to this month's Megagame Assembly Megagame Report podcast. My name is Harrison and I'd like to thank you so much for downloading this month's episode. And we've got a corker for you. This month we are going to be discussing Horizon Megagame's Monsterville Mansion with Becky from Becky Becky Blogs and John Meisen from Southwest Megagames. We gathered around a virtual fireplace, cracked out some virtual whiskey and discussed what happened with this spooky Halloween themed game. So without any further delay, sit back and enjoy. Okay, so I've now been joined by Becky and John to discuss Monsterville Mansion. So starting off, Becky from Becky Becky Blogs, who are you and what's your history of mega gaming?
Hi, I'm the designer of Everybody Dies and Trope High. I've been mega gaming for about 5.5 years now. I've done about, I don't even know, I've lost count, over 70 games, I think. Yeah. I'm based up in Leeds, so I'm part of Pennine Mega Games. I've actually just become chair of Pennine, so that's going to be a fun new challenge.
Long may the reign of Becky continue. Okay, cool. And what's your funny fact about yourself, as it's your first time on the podcast?
So I don't know how many people know this, but I actually got engaged in an escape room a little over a year ago. It was in the treasure chest at the end of the escape room, and I thought it was part of the room, and I turned around to try and solve it, and then I saw my fiance Tim down on one knee.
Oh, that's very romantic. Nice warm and fuzzies. Okay, cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us. John, what's your history of mega gaming?
I started mega gaming in late 2015. Mainly, the first one I did was one I actually ran for myself because all the others were too far away, and that seemed to be easier than, you know, driving to London. Since then, I've been playing, controlling, and running mega games generally throughout of England and Wales.
Fantastic. Okay, cool. And what's your funny fact about yourself?
I once won a trophy that said most drunk on it for a Talisman casual league. The great thing about that fact is that it gets less cool the longer it goes on.
Had you been playing Talisman for about 15 hours at that point?
It was sort of like once a week kind of thing.
Okay.
And I found that going to that one space on the board where, and if you have never played Talisman, this will explain what I mean. You go to this one space on the board where you can roll a dice, and if you roll a one, you get drunk, and I think you get some extra experience for doing that. I did that. I went to that space and did that many times because it was more fun than trying to win the game.
Yes, my experience of Talisman would definitely agree with you there. Okay, fantastic, cool. So we are going to be talking about Monsterville Mansion, which was run on the 26th of October in London, designed and run by Alex Beck of Horizon Mega Games. Becky, do you want to give us the quick elevator pitch for what Monsterville Mansion was?
Sure. So Monsterville Mansion is set in a classic American town, which has a nearby university in it called Monsterville University. And every year on Halloween, the kids at Monsterville University have a bet or a challenge to go into the nearby Monsterville Mansion and do a dare or something. This year it was to go in and tag a bunch of the rooms. About half of the players were student players, I think slightly over half were monster players. There were a couple of press players running about finding out what was going on. And honestly, as a student player, I really have no idea what the monsters were up to, even though I did become a monster towards the end. But it was a very sort of opaque game, so each side just knew really what they were doing and had no idea what the other side were doing, I think.
Yeah, I've got to say, Harrison, really disappointed in your heavily biased reporting here. The real elevator pitch for Monsterville Mansion is that there are 7 different groups of very important, very superior to humans monsters who all have a very important midnight ritual to complete and are trying to control as many resources as possible. And also some humans are there and are being annoying.
Well, I don't think we need to explain which side of the divide you guys are on, but just in case anyone didn't quite pick it up, Becky, what was your role?
So I was a student. I was the party kid on the Greek Council, which is one of the 3 human teams. I actually brought some Sambuca along to the game in true party kid fashion to try and get all of my competitors drunk, obviously.
Nice. Well, I was going to say, what were your goals for the game? But it's just getting everybody drunk. Was that top of the list?
It wasn't actually technically on the list. As a party kid, I wanted to get find a load of yearbook pages, which were like items scattered about. As a human, our team wanted to tag 30 rooms in the mansion with spray paint to win the challenge. I also personally had a very, very secret objective that I think absolutely everyone knew, which was to become a vampire. I did actually have a fourth objective on my list, which was to, as a possible objective, which was to come out of the mansion unscathed, still human, still pure. But I didn't actually read that one until after the game. So hence why I went so strongly into the vampirism.
Well, you never mind. A couple out of four ain't bad. Okay, so John, what was your role?
So I was one of the mad scientists, which was one of seven different factions of various spooks and ghouls that were living in the mansion. And basically, the mad scientists were all trying to work together towards our end goal of having the best ritual of the seven different monsters, because we were all having midnight rituals, and we all needed to generate as much energy as possible. And whoever had the most would be able to summon the big, big, scary, mega spooky monster, which would, in theory, rampage through the town.
Excellent. Sounds like a good time. So was that just, were your goals all centered around that, or did you have some personal objectives as well?
So that was sort of the core objective. There were also sort of rival objectives where each faction had a rival, except for the mad scientists, who were sort of, we were our own rivals. But, you know, as true scientists, we were above all politics of the other rival clans. So otherwise, the other things was just sort of, we wanted to collect knowledge and magical creations, and we wanted to just sort of control as much of the mansion as possible. And if necessary, get, you know, the politics on our side and get some more humans recruited into our ranks of geniuses who the world doesn't understand.
Excellent. I'm sure there's going to be no bias for monsters versus humans from either of you throughout the rest of the year. The rest of the chat, I'm sure you'll be nice and level on both sides. Okay, so what happened at the very beginning? What was the state of the universe at the beginning of the game?
The human teams all started on different floors. So it was about 6-7 o'clock in the evening or something in game time. And we just arrived at the mansion. We didn't know monsters existed. It was very strong in the briefing materials that even though, you know, your best friend might be a monster, for the purposes of the game, you had no idea who they were. And if you actually encountered them, you would be immediately terrorized and take some horror damage.
Okay. And for the monsters, John?
So each of the monsters were sort of very equally spread on everything. So there were three different floors to the map, or to the mansion, as Becky said. But unlike the humans who had like one team on each map, the monsters had one representative from each team on each map and one sort of starting room on each map. And so basically you went from there and started to control more rooms that were adjacent to the room you started with in order to have the ability to generate more resources and control more of the space.
Okay, so from the sounds of it, the humans weren't so sure about the existence of monsters, but the monsters didn't really care about the existence of humans. Is that what I'm picking up?
Basically, yes.
Okay.
From the monster perspective, the humans were sort of at most a nuisance, and at least barely there. It sort of depended what they were doing. They kept spray painting things, which was sort of annoying in a narrative sense, but mechanically didn't really change anything. So I just imagined like my character doing the crazy experiments in his lab whilst like someone spray paints his back and he just doesn't notice or doesn't care either way. He's too
busy. Such is his commitment to science.
Exactly, yeah. It doesn't matter what color my lab coat is. I just need to make this, you know, tentacle fit onto this other tentacle.
All these pesky kids with their spray paint and their sambuca.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so what did the average turn look like for you, John?
So I was one of the three people on my team who was on one of the three maps. I was on the ground floor, which is the middle one. And basically, we had five cards and they had five different actions. Three of those actions were attack humans. But then there was one that allowed us to gather certain resources, and there was another that allowed us to expand into another room. But a big part of the game was all about collecting stickers, which you use to change what cards or rooms do. So it was mainly taking those five cards and changing them to either be better things or things that were more useful than what they currently did. So by the end of the game, I think only two of the cards were the same as they were at the start. The rest had all been upgraded or changed. So it was about sort of figuring out what you needed to do with those cards. And, you know, you'd change which five actions you could do each turn based on which stickers you got.
Excellent. And I have to confess from the beginning that I wasn't at the game for one of two reasons. The main one I tell people is that I was on holiday, but the second is that I'm just a great big scaredy cat, so anything involving monsters and scariness and Halloween in general is not really in my wheelhouse. But I did gather from the various conversations that are happening on social media that Alex went a little bit sticker crazy, and it seems like, Becky, you were on the receiving end of quite a few of those stickers.
Yeah, so I think I ended the game... We were actually given sheets of paper to put our stickers on. These are the circular ones that demarked horror damage, damage, and physical damage, I guess, and corruption. But I lost my bit of paper quite early on. So when I ended up getting absolutely mauled by first a wraith and then a swamp monster in the penultimate and last turns, I decided to just stick them all over my dress and my arm. Because
it did look like you'd come down with something.
I come down with a serious case of being horrified, and one of the mechanics as well is if you went over 10 either physical damage or horror damage, you sort of like, I think, oh, it didn't happen to me, but I think you like passed out for a bit. Horror damage, you basically ran through the corridors screaming and unable to talk to anyone except screaming at them about the horrible thing that you'd seen until after the sort of until the start of the next turn. And that was actually quite fun, actually. I've been to games before where you sort of have to take a time out if you're killed. And it can be a bit sort of deflating in the middle of a game. But this one, it was just quite fun to go around screaming.
That sounds very in character.
Yeah, exactly.
And I bet the Sambuca helped with that as well.
Yes, it did.
Okay, so apart from covering yourself in stickers and drinking Sambuca, what did your average turn look like, Becky?
So a lot of it was sounds quite similar to John's. We had five cards that we could do sort of any number of in a turn, and one of them would be like tagging the room or searching the room. You could search the room for occult stuff or general stuff. One of them was escape to another room, which I eventually decided was less important than being able to see in the dark, so I got a torch for it. And yeah, a lot of it was gaining stickers on to put on top of the cards as well. So upgrading the powers you had, deciding which was more important, a torch or running away. But then we also had, I think, a bit more downtime than the monsters, because we went first in the turn and then the monsters went second. And during that time, it was a hell of a lot of role play. I think it's one of the most role play heavy games I've gone to. And that was literally being a teenager, giving people Sambuca. I put on a really, really awful American accent the entire day, and which irritated the hell out of everyone else, I think.
Do you want to give us a short sample of that now?
Just give me a sec.
For those of us who weren't lucky enough to experience it at the game.
Oh my God, Maddie was flirting with my boyfriend. Can you believe it?
I mean, that was like I was in America for a few seconds there. That was very well done.
And that's also a really good taster of what the roleplay bits were like. It was, will you be my best friend? Will you go out with me? Oh, we're going out. Shall we go to the woods together? Like, it was stuff like that, like really teenage. and then also like, oh, there's a vampire over there. I might go ask him how to become a vampire. Like stuff like that. It was crazy.
So it sounds very much like a roleplay focused game rather than a mechanics focused game. Would you say that's fair?
There were mechanics. There were the right number of mechanics that gave sort of like the turn structure, and like you knew how to try and do things. Like you knew there was a resource that we had called willpower. Chances are, if you want to do something, you need willpower. There were mechanics, but there were a lot of opportunities for some really fun roleplay.
It's interesting you say that, because from the monster perspective, and perhaps there are other people who played the game who would have a different view of things, it was almost entirely mechanical with incredibly little room for role play. The key kind of objective of the game was to have the most infernal energy, which is the resource that makes your ritual the best at the end. and pretty much everything you did needed to be whatever was best to get you the most infernal energy. And also, like you said, because our turn was longer, you know, for the humans, there was maybe five of them on a table and their turn seemed to be a lot quicker and simpler. And then for the rock monsters, there was seven of us and we had a whole kind of area slash room control game and resource generation game and then trying to buy stickers and then trying to figure out what actions we were going to do next. So I was incredibly busy the whole time. And there were people coming up to me as well, because, of course, we were the mad scientists. We had a reputation for, you know, mad science. People would come up to me and say, can you make this for me, or can you do something for me that involves this? And I think there were times when some of my teammates were able to handle that. But in my terms, like, there wasn't really anything in the mechanics for that. And also, I didn't really have time for that. And anything that cost us resources, if it wasn't getting us infernal energy, it wasn't really worth it. So this was arguably one of the most mechanical games I've played in my very personal experience.
Oh, that's interesting. And do you think that split was the difference was because you were the scientist, or do you think that was the case for the other monsters as well?
I think that's the case for all. I would say that would probably be likely the case for all monsters. But like I said, like, maybe some of them figured out a way to make more time for that, or talk to control more, or talk to the humans more. But that was, generally speaking, I think the average monster experience, at least for the ones on the maps. There was basically a council game for the monsters, which I have no idea what they were doing, because it just seemed like there were tracks and they'd argue about if the tracks should be moved. But I assumed those guys had more space for like role play and doing weird stuff. One of them definitely did, because they tried to overthrow the Dark Regent, which was a bad idea because the Dark Regent is a powerful demon lord and also played by Chrissy.
Yes, that's a dangerous combination.
Yeah.
I think she was the only person the monsters were scared of.
And not without cause, I'd say. Okay, so I was going to ask, other than like the individual people running around tagging rooms, were there any like overarching plots and schemes going on that you were involved in or you saw that weren't just affecting individual players that were trying to like change the world in general?
Most of the humans had, I think actually all of the humans had a monster party that they were more inclined towards. Relationships were a big thing. That was a really big thing throughout the entire thing. I really like how Alex did that, because you had a relationship, you started the game with two best friend cards and one romantic interest card, and you could go up and hand your card to someone else. It cost you willpower to hand your card to someone else to like summon up the courage to say feelings, and then immediately they had to decide to either give you their card in return, in which case you both got four willpower, or they could reject you and they gained six willpower and you gained nothing and you lost your card and you had to pay willpower to get it back again. So that was a really big sort of plot. But again, that was on sort of a very personal level. It wasn't so much on a overarching level.
Yeah. And was there a mechanical advantage once you were in a relationship with someone, or was it just that initial increase in points?
There was. So one of the things that we were doing during, sort of after we'd done all the on the map mechanics, was this thing called the party, where we got to move around a sort of a smaller map, where it was us mingling at a party and you had to work out which space you were going to land on. If you landed on a certain space, you'd get willpower or an item card or some health or health healing or some horror healing. And if you shared a space with someone else, you had to split it unless you were best friends or dating, in which case you both got the full amount. So that was sort of the advantage to being in a relationship. Also, it sort of helped you sort of trust people a bit more. So my boyfriend for most of the game ended up almost becoming a vampire with me, except he decided to go off and grow four extra arms.
So that was the other thing, was we did put a lot of arms on people.
What would you guys? I didn't actually realize.
Well, I mean,
that.
Who else?
Mad science. It's clues in the title.
True.
Yeah, True. I don't even know what that was. Like I said, this was one of those things that what the other people on my team did at one point was like they decided that they were going to set up like a spa treatment in the basement for any humans that wanted to come down. And then it turned out that when you went to the spa treatment, you got extra arms fused onto you. And then after this happened to like one person, everyone seemed to want it. And I don't know why, but they kept asking me about it. So yeah.
That might be because I told everyone that more arms meant you were better at cuddling. So all the people who are struggling to get into relationships might have been like, I need to get more arms, then I'll be more attractive. I don't know.
It's good as any other justification.
I mean, I'm sure there's probably some basis in scientific fact there somewhere if you look hard enough for it.
Yeah. I mean, but the other thing is that, interestingly, symmetrically speaking, the party game that Becky was talking about with the humans, the monsters had a very similar game on their side. But rather than being about a party, it was about controlling your big mega spook monster. So each faction had their own mega spook, which was some variation of big monster that you moved around like a programming game, almost exactly the same as how they moved around in the party game, where each player would essentially have like five things that said left or up or stay where you are, and that would move your token around. And then where all the four players on the team's tokens were would land on other things that said move up or move left or turn around, and that would move the mega spook around, and you could use it to sort of take other people's rooms or charge up more infernal energy depending on when it landed.
Okay, so you were playing quite almost an operational game from the sound of it, if you're going around taking rooms and taking rooms off other people and holding rooms and that kind of thing. Is that accurate from what you experienced?
Absolutely. So yeah, during the sort of the regular action phase, it was all about control as many rooms as possible, generate as many resources as possible, buy stickers to make yourself more efficient, generate as much infernal energy as possible. That last bit with the things was more of a sort of a real-time puzzle game, which at the end affected what your mega spook did, where it moved, and that could also gain you an extra room. It was the only way to steal rooms away from other teams, which was quite important because, you know, once the rooms had all been taken up, the only way to gain new rooms once there was no neutral rooms left was to steal them with the mega spook.
And how long did it take for all the rooms to get filled up and for you to be bumping heads with others?
I think it was about 40% of the way through the game.
Okay.
And we didn't necessarily bump that many heads because you could still get a lot of energy by landing in your own rooms, and we probably did that half the time. The rest of the time we were picking on the werewolves because the way our team worked as the scientists, we didn't have any rivals. So our best option was to make sure that all the other rivalries were as balanced as possible because that helped us out. So the werewolves ended up doing much, much better than their rivals. So we kept hitting the werewolves as much as we could. So we were mainly going for the werewolves during most of the game.
Okay, so by that halfway point when all the rooms had been taken up, what else was happening around the game other than Becky walking around drinking Sambuca and convincing everyone to grow extra arms?
So, I mean, I think the main thing then is just sort of using the rooms you have. So people were trying to figure out like which stickers were the best ones to have in the rooms, which were the best cards to, you know, best stickers to put on your cards to upgrade them. But there were definitely some other things going on. Like I said, I think one of the teams was working to overthrow the Dark Regent, which was an ongoing thing that I assume took them time and resources. But again, I have no idea exactly what they were doing. And there was definitely, we were all attempting to get humans into our rituals, I assume, because there were cards that said for each human in your ritual, gain more points. And eventually we did manage to get a couple. It required the humans to be a certain level of corrupted. And one of the things I did during the game was I got some stickers that allowed me to generate item cards and then corrupt item cards. And then I could just give those item cards to the humans and corrupt them with their consent. They were all up for being in the ritual. So they were like, yes, please increase my corruption level so I can join you. So that was like another mechanic that I was sort of using.
Corrupting with consent. I think that's an interesting concept. Yeah. Becky, what was the human game looking like at midway point?
So around the... I completely lost track of time, to be completely honest.
Was that the Sambuca again?
It might have been. I'm not very good at keeping track of things in mecha games, even when I haven't been drinking, to be honest. but yeah, so the human team, in like each team's aim of the three teams, they were trying to tag 10 rooms on each floor. So I think it was actually pretty close between all three of the teams, the most of the way through. I think us in the Greek Council were slightly ahead because we tagged everything on the top floor first, and then we'd move down to the middle room. So around the middle of the game, I think I'd because it was a really personal game, I don't have a massive idea about what everyone else on my team was doing. So they all did like a really good job, including sort of the two that were pretty new players, Nicola and Jonathan. But it was quite a personal game. So I'd run into the vampires by this point. So we tagged all of the top floor. We tagged most of the second floor. But I was kind of trying to give my team the slip a little bit so that I could go side with the vampires a bit. So Johan was trying to corrupt me with my consent, much like with John. But it was quite hard to corrupt me, apparently. And I decided I didn't want to. I had ways I could corrupt myself by like attacking other humans, but I didn't want to. So Johan was trying to hypnotize me.
Was that a game mechanic, or was he just looking at you in a real weird way?
Well, this is the thing. I started telling people that Johan kept gazing deeply into my eyes, and it wasn't really doing much for me. So I think there was a bit of a rumor going around that Johan wasn't a very persuasive vampire at one point, but
which is ironic because he's probably got the most practice of anyone in mega gaming. So you think he'd be better at that?
Maybe he just wanted to keep it, you know, keep his real skills under wraps.
Yes, that's probably it. Yeah, keep his cover intact. Very sensible.
There was one bit where I was so desperate to get corrupted that I was going to go and try and tell the Dark Regent that she couldn't speak to anyone from the Great Council unless she was a member of Kappa 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 sorority from sororities, because that would definitely have pissed her off.
How did that go down?
I didn't end up doing it because I started managing to get corrupted, and then the vampires lied to me and told me that Matty had been flirting with my boyfriend, so I started going after her instead and decided I would attack a human. And it didn't really work because the press were doing announcements each turn, and they gave me permission to burst in and interrupt one in a very sort of very Jerry Springer fashion. I burst in and accused her of stealing my boyfriend. Only I did it in such a high-pitched voice, no one actually understood what I was saying, I think including Matty.
I think we got the gist, like the two of you were just like yelling at each other drunkenly about something to do with boyfriends, and like we were just like, yeah, we get it.
Yeah, and then her girlfriend ran up and started shouting at me, and then my boyfriend didn't run up and support me, so I broke up with it. It was so teenage, but like...
It sounds incredibly high school.
It was really high school.
Okay, so apart from breakups and screaming at each other, were all of the human teams playing more kind of like individual games, or were there some that were working more as a team?
I mean, we're also working sort of towards our team objectives overall. Like, even though I wanted to be a vampire, I still wanted the Greek Council to win the Halloween challenge. And I think one of the nice things about the human game is we could work together quite well, because when we tagged a room, if there was already a tag on the room, it didn't remove that. So, like, there would probably have been a way to sabotage other teams. I've only now thought is a possibility, but generally, we were just going about doing our own thing and working, even though we're in three different teams, fairly cooperatively.
Oh, that's good. That's unusual for a mega game, but I can tell from the surprise in your voice.
Yeah.
Okay, so did that just carry on through the afternoon? Is that just pretty much what you guys got up to for the rest of the day, or was there anything else that happened in between then and the end of the game?
Right towards the end of the game, Beck said it was going to be the next to last turn, and we realised that physically we could only tag five rooms a turn, and we had 11 left to tag, and we were like, we're going to manage this. So I ended up giving, I fully gone over to the vampires and I was like, yes, I'm yours, take me. And I ended up giving my spray can to the vampires and get them to finish off tagging all of our rooms for us, because like, we didn't physically have enough time to get round it. So that was one of my favourite sort of last minute brainwaves.
That's pretty creative thinking.
It's like, yes, I will commit. I will commit the rest of my mortal life to becoming an undead perfect being. But I am going to need you to take this can, Drac, and I am going to need you to write a nerd suck on the wall. Then I'm quitting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I might then just carry on going to the university at like night school or something. So I didn't want to completely lose my rep.
Okay. I do really kind of wish I played in this game. Now, hearing these stories, it's it does sound quite an unusual one. John, what was the state of the monster game as the game went towards the end?
Well, as the game went towards the end, like I said, because it was quite mechanical, it was all about like trying to figure out the best ways to use units. We basically had servants, and each servant could do actions in the room. So it's sort of, what can we do with each of our servants in order to gain the most energy? We also, because like I said, the scientists really benefited from all the rivalries being equal, and the vampire werewolf rivalry was very lopsided in the werewolf's favor. So we just started throwing all our excess resources at the vampires. Because we know that they'd use it in one way or another to redress the balance. And we also, one of the late game things we ended up doing was trying to recruit more humans, which is difficult because at the time I didn't realize that there was like specific briefing things about people who wanted to go to certain sides. We knew that we had Russell on board, and I think he was obviously the one with the briefing for us. Russell managed to bring one more person with him, and it was all about sort of generating enough corruption that we could make sure both of them would be on board, and making sure that on the political side, the political track that determined the minimum amount of corruption required for a human to take part in the ritual was like low enough that they'd definitely qualify, or as many humans as we could get would be able to qualify based on how low it was. But in the end, we only got two. And then it was, you know, the bell hit midnight and we all went to do our rituals.
And what happened then with the rituals?
So with the rituals, the three different rivalries lined up on three different maps. And also the scientists went to the ground floor map. Nothing really happened on the maps. It was just to make sure that we weren't all standing in exactly the same place and crowding it out too much. And then each of the rivalries, essentially, everyone spent all their infernal energy in order to... Well, everyone had their infernal energy, and the more you had, the more cards you got to draw. And when you drew a card, it essentially attacked your rival's infernal energy. So everyone was basically reducing their rival's infernal energy. The mad scientists reduced their own infernal energy based on what they had. So it's sort of like we had a perfectly matched rival, regardless of how well we did. After all was said and done, the vampires actually managed to win. And I don't know how much of that was thanks to us, but apparently they did manage to turn the tide and get more infernal energy than the werewolves in the end. However, overall, and I don't know if this was necessarily because there was a slight imbalance due to the way our special rules worked for not having a rival, but the mad scientist did end up having the most infernal energy of all of the seven teams. I think it was like 92 at the end, and I don't know what they were on the other tables, but on our table where we had the, cultists and the wraiths, I think they wound up with, one of them had something like high 60s, one of them had like 40. I can't really remember,
but you trounced them.
I mean, sort of, but like I said, I don't know if we had some advantages because of how our rules worked and we didn't have a rival. There were lots of like little different cards that did different things, and depending on how we used those, it might have had like a big swing on the end result. But regardless, we won with the rules as written, and we had 92 points. And then throughout the game, I'm sure Becky can elaborate on this, at the end of each sort of human turn, the humans had been like finding mysteries and picking up various items. And like, I'd assumed that that was going to be important, but like, I literally had no idea what it was and no way to affect it. So I just let it happen. And then what happened at the end of the game, so we had 92 points. Actually, maybe I should just let Becky take this part because it was really more of a human thing.
I mean, by this point, I was a vampire, so I saw what happened on the vampire versus werewolf table, which was that, yes, the vampires went in with more. I think the werewolves still went in with more, actually. I don't know.
The werewolves definitely started with more points. They had about 80 to the vampires, 30 or something like that, something along those lines.
There was a lot of maths. The vampires ended up with a zero because the werewolves just absolutely outdrew them on cards. So throughout the game, we were discovering secrets. Like at the end of each human phase, the humans could try to draw a secret. Which I was trying to do as much as possible, because then I could keep hold of the secrets and not give them to the humans, because I wanted the vampires to win. Then at the end of the game, obviously, when the vampires already hadn't won, I wasn't quite sure what to do with them. But I didn't really have a choice of what to do with them, because I'd already left and gone over to the human side. But yeah, there were these secrets, and it was things like if a human is standing in the library with two souls at midnight, then the ritual will be disrupted and things like that. And I wasn't there for that part of the human game when they were actually fighting the big bad, but they took some points off your infernal energy, I think. And then we could also spend extra will points to take points off.
Yes. So the humans, I assumed you knew more about this, but I guess, yes, if you were with the vampires, you wouldn't. So yeah, so there are a number of things where the humans got information that if one player declared themselves to be in a particular room and they were holding a particular resource, then that would reduce the infernal energy, our final total infernal energy, by a certain amount. And there were, I think, like 5 or 6 of these, maybe more.
Oh, there were tons. I personally was holding 3 at the end of the game. There were probably more like 25. Okay,
well, I think only like 6 or 7 of them were actually triggered. But then, also humans, like for every 5 willpower points they had at the end, they could draw another card that reduced. And so every time they drew a card, like we'd lose a certain amount of our points. And like I said, we started off at 92 and it just kept going down and down and down until eventually it reached a -4. And as soon as it hits 0, basically that means that we haven't released our big mega spook Frankenstein's monster onto the town. And instead, everyone's saved. So kind of a bad ending for the day. You know, it's a shame that things couldn't have ended on a more optimistic note.
And were none of the mega spooks summoned in the end then? Did the nasty humans prevail?
Basically, yeah. So I think the idea of the 7 rituals was to determine which ritual was like the best monster ritual and which got the chance to go ahead. And then the thing that happened after was with the humans was the humans trying to stop whatever ritual wound up being the actual one that succeeded, which they managed to do.
That's a shame. I'm sorry for your troubles.
Yeah.
Okay. So by the game end, a big bad had been summoned, but the humans fought it off. Is that the, when the curtain came down?
Yeah. Well, you know, inferior minds, they can't quite handle exactly what, you know, is best for the future.
Well, there's always next year, isn't there? Okay, so were there any particular mechanics that either of you encountered that you haven't mentioned previously that you really enjoyed? Starting with you, Becky.
I mean, I've mentioned it, but I'm absolutely going to be borrowing the relationships sort of prisoner's dilemma mechanic for the next round of trope. That was just summed up the trials and tribulations of being a teenager in love, I think. And I think it's what trope needs.
Yes, I was going to say, it does sound like there's potential crossover for inspiration of various rules for between the two games that can go across. John, how about you?
There was a couple of things I liked. I liked when, near the end, we were trying to convince humans to come join our ritual. I really don't know, like, if we could have offered them something or how much that was just more about just role play and people wanting to be into certain things. But I was just sort of running around trying to figure out if I could get anyone else to come to our ritual. And that was always interesting because it was a very social challenge. The other thing I really liked was the press, which in this game, obviously, it's such a bizarre kind of context to have press in. And what they did, which I thought was really fun, was they had a 2-player press team who were just like, oh, we want to prove monsters are real, so we're going to follow the other teenagers into the Haunted Mansion. You know, it's like that thing where the kids are like, you know, they've got a handheld camera and they're uploading something that they're going to put on the internet later. They're recording something even. And they're just like, it's the spooky monster news show. We're going to bring you the truth. So that was great because they were constantly like trying to discover all the monsters and then trying to like interview all the monsters. Arguably the best part of my game was when I was talking to Ed Silverstone, who was half of the press team, and he was just asking me about like whatever I was doing as a mad scientist in my laboratory. And I just sort of got to ham it up and answer none of his questions in a useful way, but all of them in a fun way.
That does sound pretty good.
Ed did like an absolutely amazing job at that. I think my favorite one of their reports was when they did an interview with a vampire and they just had Johan's jacket with like a pole in it to like keep it upright, and Johan was shouting his answers from down in the audience.
Yeah, it's an empty jacket on a stick, because of course you can't get vampires on camera.
Oh no.
The worrying thing about that is the implication that he wasn't wearing trousers. No one really brought up, but I assume it was just like a cropping thing.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just an issue with the framing, that's all. Any particular funny moments you want to recant to us?
At the end, like as the humans were slowly like depleting our end energy, I was like, well, if they might win, and if they do, at least I can think of like the perfect line. And as soon as we got to zero, I just shouted, and we'd have gotten away with it too if it weren't for you meddling kids and your blessed axe, which was an item that Tim had brought with him. And also that made more sense when one of the human teams had come dressed as the Mystery Ink team, which is one of my favorite costume ideas I've ever seen at a mega game. They were all like perfectly like the five mystery team gang in their costumes.
That's some impressive costume coordination right there. That's pretty well. Yeah. Becky, any funny stories for you?
I think my favorite moment of the game was when the nerds got together, the nerd from my team and the nerd from the detention club. I'd known that the nerd from the detention club was in love with my nerd for quite a long time, and I'd tried to talk him up, but I didn't think that was ever going to happen. And then he presented him with a tinfoil hat and a flower, and it was beautiful.
Oh, nerd love.
Yeah, I told them that I would vote for them to be prom king.
At another point in the game, one member of my team managed to do a weird wizard wheeze where apparently if they were able to get someone who was wearing a tinfoil hat on all three maps at the same time, we would use it to channel energy somehow. I don't really know what was going on, but it was funny because we made use of all the hats. And one other thing that I really liked was every time the guy on my table, like the cult guy who was planning to overthrow the Dark Regent, every time he like said something critical about the Dark Regent, or just like said, "Oh, I don't care what Dark Regent thinks," I would immediately sprint over to Chrissy and just snitch on him so hard. And Chrissy would give me small amounts of resources and say thank you.
A noble way to spend your day.
Yeah, I was the hero.
Yeah, absolutely. In your own story. Okay, cool. Well, the final question then, if this is run again, perhaps next Halloween, will you be signing up?
Hell yes. Honestly, I think it's one of the best games I've played. I loved being a human. I do think that the human game sounds like it was a lot more roleplay focused than the monster one. So I think if it was to run again, I'd probably still be a human unless there was more role play added into the monster side. But hell yeah, please sign me up already, Beck, please.
I think that's a yes from Becky. How about you, John?
I think, you know, if it was closer to me, if the transport wasn't quite such a challenge, because it is quite a commitment for me to go all the way to London, even though I do it quite often, then I would. It was definitely fun. It's definitely worth the time and worth the money. But personally, I don't necessarily know if it's my thing. Like, this was obviously a very cheesy, very silly game, and I knew that going in. My tastes tend to go towards the more serious stuff. But also, like I said, it was just extremely mechanical. It felt more like a fun mechanical challenge than like a fun political simulation or a fun like role play sandbox. And that's, of those three things, that might be my least favorite of those three things. Obviously, ideally, you want sort of a balance of the three. So like I said, you know, if it was I don't think I'd go again if it was run in London, but if it was run closer to me, I definitely think it'd be worth playing. It's just, it's such a commitment for me to go down there that it makes it harder.
Fair enough. And final question about the day. Becky, how much Sambuca did you end up with?
Literally none. I ran out before the end. It was really sad. I wanted to toast with all my new vampire teammates, and I literally only had half a shot left.
Ah, that's the ultimate faux pas, turning up to a vampire party without enough Sambuca. That's...
At least I didn't turn up with garlic.
Well, that's true. Okay, cool. Well, thank you very much, guys. When can people see you at a game next? Becky, what are you playing next?
I've got three games in November, the first one of which is Who Will Watch Them, which is up in Manchester by Jonathan Pickles. It's legislating superheroes. It's going to be good. I'm on the military team. It's going to be, I think, hopefully kind of similar to this in that there's going to be a lot of role play.
Excellent. I'm a redneck Republican politician in that one. I'm looking forward to a fair amount of role play in that. And John, what's your next game?
My next game is this Saturday. I'm going to the Short Herd Around the Universe in Reading, which was Tim Campbell's game, which he ran in Leeds a while back, and they're doing it again in Reading. It's going to be the third of five mega games in a row right now.
Excellent. Good work. Good work. Okay, cool. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, John, where's the best place for them to find you? The
best way to get in touch with me is send an email to contact@swmegagames.co.uk or just check out the South of Mega Games website.
Excellent. And same question to you, Becky.
Just stick Becky Becky Blogs into Google and you'll find me all over the place.
Fantastic. Okay, cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us and hopefully we'll have you back on again soon.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
So that was my conversation with Becky and John about Monsterville Mansion from last month. If you're at the game and have any funny stories to share with us, please do so on our Facebook page. Don't forget to check out the Facebook page for other blogs and podcasts, and we will catch you next time.